Hello everyone, and welcome back to the History of Scotland, episode 21, St. Margaret of Scotland. Now, before we get on with today's episode, something I got asked in an email this week was my thoughts on the impact the Romans had on Scottish-Pictish progression throughout the ages. Well, before we answer this, a couple of things to note. First, I do actually plan on going back and redoing some of the older episodes. I know I mentioned this before when I came back from my break, but I really want the first 8 episodes to be redone. A, of course, with a new microphone, and B, with the method I've been using to write these scripts, you know, the new researching methods I've been using. Second, I think something I mentioned in one of the past episodes is the divide that the Romans created between Roman Britain and the barbarians north of the Wall. I don't think it's a coincidence that the historical borders have changed only slightly throughout the history between the two countries of England and Scotland, and that these borders are very roughly similar to the ones the Romans imposed on the north of Britain when they came to conquer. That to me is something of lasting significance that the Romans gave us when they came over, and may also explain the casual view that the Scotland area is full of rowdy, kilt-screaming lunatics and the south of the Wall is full of proud, honest, working Englishmen. Both, of course, being wrong, and this is coming from an Englishman. Anyhow, stay tuned for more redone episodes on Roman Scotland, and I'm going to maybe try and expand on a few. We'll try and split them up, but we'll see what happens. I look forward to explaining more of my personal view there anyway. As mentioned last time, and something I will keep mentioning, is that we post updates for the podcast on Twitter. So please follow The History of Scotland on Twitter. We also have a Facebook group called The History of Scotland as well, if you wish to discuss the episodes with myself, with feedback and comments. So please head there. Anyway, back to our narrative. Last time, we went through the start of our glorious new king, Malcolm III's reign, going over what happened in his early years of rule, how he dealt with the fallout of killing Macbeth, and how he brought together the rest of Scotland under his uncontested rule. Now, times are changing. Malcolm was raised in the English court of Edward the Confessor. Malcolm, even though exiled at the time by Macbeth, was hating his life, he most certainly loved the style of court and grandeur Edward the Confessor's court was able to display. So much so, he will start making changes within the Scottish court, how it runs and performs, as well as the new administrative reforms throughout the kingdom. That will bring Scotland more in line with the European model, and more certainly the Anglo-Saxon style, as Malcolm's relationship with people like William Rufus develops, and his experience in the Anglo-Saxon court of Edward the Confessor helps him change Scotland for the better. But that, listeners, is for next week's episode. Today, I wanted us to go over another giant influence in our new king's life. Someone who brought her own experience, bloodshed, loss, helped guide Scotland with Malcolm into something great, and potentially helped save a lot of face after the whole, you know, Macbeth killing. This is, of course, Margaret of Wessex, or otherwise known as Saint Margaret of Scotland. So let's turn back the clock, sit down with an ice cuppa, and learn about one of Scotland's greatest saints, from her exile and travel throughout Europe, to her escape from the Normans, and then finally to becoming Queen Consort of Scotland. Let us begin. Margaret was born in 1046 and was a member of an ancient English royal family. She was a direct descendant of King Alfred, and was the granddaughter of King Edmund Ironside of England through his son Edward. Along with her family, Margaret had been exiled to the eastern continent when King Canute and his Danish army had overrun England. After the death of Edward Ironside in 1016, Canute sent the infant Edward and his brother to the court of the Swedish king, Olaf, and then eventually made their way to Kiev. As an adult, he travelled to Hungary, where in 1046 he supported the successful bid of King Andrew I for the Hungarian crown. The province of Margaret's mother, Agatha, is disputed, but Margaret was born in Hungary about 1045. Her brother, Edgar the Efling, and sister, Christina, were also born in Hungary around this time. Margaret grew up in a very religious environment in the Hungarian court. Beautiful and devout she was, also intelligent, receiving her formal education in Hungary. Margaret and her family returned to England towards the end of the reign of her great uncle, Edward the Confessor. As a younger brother, Edgar the Atheling had a very strong claim to the English throne. Whether from natural or sinister causes, her father died immediately after landing, and Margaret, still a child, continued to reside at the English court with her brother. The English nobility had other ideas of who they wanted to be king, however, and through the sneaky dealings of the Godwin family, they elected Harold Godwin as Edward's successor and king of England. All of this political manoeuvring proved irrelevant when William, Duke of Normandy, otherwise known as William the Conqueror, arrived with his army near Hastings in 1066. Check out last week's episode for more on that. As some of the last remaining Saxon royals in England, Margaret and her family's position was precarious, and fearing for their lives, they fled northwards, in the opposite direction to the advancing Normans. They were heading back to the continent from Northumbria when their ship was blown off course and landed in the Fife. This is where our Scottish king, Malcolm III, Malcolm Canmore, offered his protection to the royal family. As mentioned, Malcolm was a widower with two sons, Donald and Duncan, something that would come to cause problems for the succession down the line as it had done in Scotland with the last family civil war. Due to this fact, he would have been attracted to marrying one of the few remaining members of the Anglo-Saxon royal family. The marriage of Malcolm and Margaret occurred in 1070. Subsequently, Malcolm executed several invasions of Northumberland to support the claim of his new brother-in-law, Edgar, and to increase his own power. These, however, had little effect save the devastation of the county. But we can talk more about that and the invasions next week. Malcolm was particularly protective towards Margaret. She initially refused his proposals of marriage, preferring, according to one account, a life of piety as a virgin. Malcolm, however, was a persistent king, and the couple finally married in Dunfermline in 1069 AD. Their union was exceptionally happy and fruitful for both themselves and the Scottish nation. Margaret brought with her some of the finer points of current European manners, ceremony, and culture to the Scottish court, which highly improved its civilised reputation. And this is one of the defining factors towards the Scottish court changing to the more European style than the current Pictish / tribal style that currently is in Scotland. Queen Margaret was renowned for her good influence on her husband, and also for her devout piety and religious observance. She was a prime mover in the reform of the church in Scotland. Under Queen Margaret's leadership, church councils promoted Easter communion, and much to the joy of the working class, abstinence from servile work on a Sunday. Margaret founded churches, monasteries, and pilgrimage hostels and established the Royal Mausoleum at Dunfermline Abbey with monks from Canterbury. She was especially fond of Scottish saints and instigated the Queen's Ferry over the Forth so that pilgrims could more easily reach the shrine of Saint Andrew. Mass was changed from the many dialects of Gaelic spoken throughout Scotland to the unifying Latin. By adopting Latin to celebrate the Mass, she believed that all Scots could worship together in unity, along with the other Christians of Western Europe. Many people believe that in doing this, it was not only Queen Margaret's goal to unite the Scots, but also the two nations of Scotland and England in an attempt to end the bloody warfare between the two countries. And this is quite interesting considering what would later happen when James would come to the throne, that these foundations were laid a long time ago by people like Margaret of Scotland. In setting the agenda for the church in Scotland, Queen Margaret also ensured the dominance of the Roman church over the native Celtic church in the north of the country. Now, we touched on the Celtic church in one of our past episodes discussing Christianity as a whole. And in that episode, we mentioned how the Celtic church had a strong population that had migrated from Ireland in previous years. Now, Margaret and Malcolm had many children, all with English names. Alexander and David followed their father to the throne, whilst their daughter Edith, who changed her name to Matilda upon her marriage, brought the ancient Anglo-Saxon and Scottish royal bloodline into the veins of the Norman invaders of England when she married and bore the children to King Henry I of England. In total, Margaret and Malcolm had 8 children, 6 sons and 2 daughters. Little would they both know that their kids would be caught in a family civil war for the throne, and that their evil uncle, the son of Duncan I, Malcolm's brother Donald III, who had been hiding out in Ireland from Macbeth and had only recently returned to court, would take over the king, causing the siblings to split on which side to take. Which side would they take? Would they take the side of their uncle, Donald III, or would they help their half-brother, Duncan, take the throne instead? And this is something we'll get into in later episodes, so a bit of a plot spoiler, I do apologise. Anyway, the kids were named as the following. We had Edward, who was the heir apparent, but he, spoiler, would be killed along with his father, and we'll get more into that next in the final episodes. There was Edmund, there was Alfred, there was Edgar, who would also become king, Alexander I, who would become king, Edith, who became Matilda, Queen of England, Mary, who became the Countess of Boulogne, and then finally we had David, who would become known as David I of Scotland, who reigned for a glorious 20 plus years, who was the last to come to the throne out of all the Malcolm children, and whose reign was great for many years as it ended the civil war between his brothers and uncles. Since they were all now pretty much dead at that time anyway, and like how his father changed the court of Scotland, more importantly, he began to change the court to the Norman French style. But that is for a future tale. Margaret was very pious, as we've gone through, and cared especially for the poor and orphans. It was this piety that caused considerable damage to her health with this repeated fasting and abstinence. Margaret's biographer, Turgot of Durham, Bishop of St. Andrews, credits her with having a civilised influence on her husband Malcolm by reading him narratives from the Bible. She instigated religious reform, striving to conform the worship and practices of the church in Scotland to those of Rome. This she did on the inspiration and with the guidance of Lanfranc, a future Archbishop of Canterbury. She also worked to conform the practices of the Scottish Church to those of the Continental Church, which she had experienced in her childhood in Hungary at her time of being brought up. Due to these achievements, she was considered an exemplar of the just ruler, and moreover influenced her husband and children, especially her youngest son, the future King David I of Scotland, to just be and as holy as her. The chroniclers all agree in depicting Queen Margaret as a strong, pure, noble character who had a very great influence over her husband and through him over Scottish history, especially when it came to religious aspects. Her religion, which was genuine and intense, was of the newest Roman style, and to her attributed a number of reforms by which the church in Scotland was considerably modified from the insular and primitive type which down to her time had exhibited. Among these expressly mentioned are a change in the manner of observing Lent, which thenceforth began and elsewhere on Ash Wednesday and not as previously on the following Monday, and the removal of the old practice of observing Saturday, not Sunday, as a day of rest from labour. The latter editions of the Encyclopaedia Britannica, however, as an example, the 11th edition removes Skene's opinion that the Scottish Catholics formerly rested from work on Saturday, something for which there is no historical evidence. This volume quotes from a contemporary document regarding Margaret's life, but his source says nothing at all of a Saturday Sabbath observance, but rather says that St. Margaret exhorted the Scots to cease their tendency to neglect the due observance of the Lord's Day on a Sunday. She attended charitable works, serving orphans and the poor every day before she ate, and washing the feet of the poor of Christ at the end of the night. She rose at midnight as well, at every night to attend prayers. She successfully invited the Benedictine order to establish a monastery in Dunfermline in the Fife in 1072 AD, and established ferries at Queen's Ferry and North Berwick to assist pilgrims journeying from the south of the Firth of the Forth to St Andrews in Fife. She used a cave on the banks of the Tower Burn in Dunfermline as a place of devotion and prayer. St Margaret's Cave, it now covered beneath a municipal car park, is open to the public. Among other deeds, however, Margaret also instigated the restoration of Iona Abbey in Scotland, the holy abbey that fellow Scottish kings were being buried. She is also known to have interceded for the release of fellow English exiles who had been forced into serfdom by northern conquest of England. Margaret was as pious privately as she was publicly. She spent much of her time in prayer, devotion, reading, and performing religious duties. This apparently had a considerable effect on the more uncouth Malcolm, who was illiterate. He so admired her piety that he had her books decorated in gold and silver. One of these, a pocket gospel book with portraits of the evangelicalists, is in the Bodleian Library in Oxford, England. Malcolm was apparently largely ignorant of the long-term effects of Margaret's endeavours, not being especially religious himself. He was content for her to pursue her reforms as she desired, which was a testament to the strength of and affection in their marriage. If we look into the future a bit, spoilers for any future episode of course, Margaret died on the 16th of November 1093. 3 days after the deaths of her husband and eldest son. The cause of the death was reportedly grief. She was buried next to Malcolm before the high altar in Dunfermline Abbey in the Fife in Scotland, showing their eternal love for each other and proof that their marriage, along with the amount of kids they had, was a very happy one. In 1250 AD, the year of her canonisation, her body, that of her husband, were exhumed and placed in a new shrine in the abbey. In 1560, Mary Queen of Scots had Margaret's head removed to Edinburgh Castle as a relic to help her assist in childbirth. In 1597, Margaret's head ended up with the Ducets at Scots College, but she was lost during the French Revolution when they went over to France. King Philip of Spain had the other remains of Margaret and Malcolm transferred to his palace in Madrid, Spain, but their present location has not been discovered. Pope Innocent V canonised St Margaret in 1250, in recognition of her personal holiness, fidelity to the Roman Catholic Church, and the work of religious reform that she had performed within Scotland and the charity she did on a day-to-day basis. On the 19th of June 1250, after her canonisation, her remains were transferred to a chapel also towards the Dunfermline Abbey in the Fife of Scotland. These two remains would be then split up. In 1693, Pope Innocent XII moved her fast day to 10th of June in recognition of the birthday of the son of James of Scotland. In revision of the general Roman calendar in 1969, 16th of November became free, and the church transferred her feast day to the 16th of November, the date of her death, on which it always has been observed in Scotland. However, some traditionalist Catholics continue to celebrate her feast day on the 10th of June. She is also venerated as a saint in the Anglican Church. Margaret is remembered in the Church of England with a lesser festival on the 16th of November. Now, there are a few institutions that bear her name. Several churches throughout the world are dedicated in the honour of St Margaret. One of the oldest is St Margaret's Chapel in Edinburgh Castle in Edinburgh, Scotland, which her son, King David I, had founded. Which I now feel a slight digression coming, so please bear with me as I tell you about the chapel's history. It was originally thought that St Margaret herself worshipped in this small chapel, but the style of the architecture indicates that it was built during the reign of David I, her fourth son, who ruled from 1124 to 1153. The chapel formed part of the larger building, located to the north, which contained the castle's royal lodgings. On the night of the 14th of March, 1314, the castle was captured by Robert the Bruce. He destroyed all the buildings in the castle except for the little chapel. On his deathbed in 1329, Bruce spoke of the story of Queen Margaret and issued orders for the chapel's repair, with some £40 Scots put being aside for that purpose. For many years afterwards, the building was known as the Royal Chapel in the castle. There is a fairly frequent record of services held in the chapel, though another larger chapel was also in use within the castle. The chapel fell into disuse at the Protestant Reformation and was used as a gunpowder store from the 16th century. By 1845, the chapel formed a storeroom at the western end of the 18th century garrison chapel. When the Sir Daniel William Wilson realised the significance of the chapel and publicised the building. The garrison chapel was demolished and the St. Margaret's Chapel was restored in 1851 to 1852 with the support of Queen Victoria. The barrel vault over the nave was added at this time, in keeping with the architectural style of the earlier fabric. Stained glass was installed in 1922, and in 1929 further work was carried out to bring the chapel back into use, and the restored and refurbished chapel was dedicated on the 16th of March 1934. The St. Margaret's Chapel Guild was started in 1942 under the patronage of Princess Margaret and leadership of Lady Russell. In 1993, as a commemoration of the 900th anniversary of the death of St. Margaret, Historic Scotland renovated the chapel and St. Margaret's Chapel Guild refurbished it with a new altar cloth, 10 bench seats, an alms chest, a flower stand and a display case for a fan-like smile of St. Margaret's Gospel book. Members of St. Margaret's Chapel Guild now have a tradition of ensuring that there are always fresh flowers in the chapel to welcome visitors. Baptisms and weddings are held at the chapel as well. The small, irregular stone building has some similarities to the earlier Scottish and Irish Celtic chapels as well. The five stained glass windows were made by Douglas Strachan in 1922 and illustrate St. Margaret, St. Andrew, St. Columbia, St. Ninan, and William Wallace. So, let's go back to where our story is and leave Margaret as she was in Malcolm's court just as she was becoming Queen Consort of Scotland. This isn't the end for Margaret, but I wanted to dedicate an entire episode to one of Scotland's most interesting saints. Her story could honestly be told in such more detail, so I really hope I did her justice, and I would love to see her in some type of TV show or massive book written about her. Next week, we'll be learning of Malcolm III's relationship with William Rufus, the new King of England. As I said, Malcolm was raised in the English court of Edward the Confessor. He'll start to make changes within the Scottish court of how it runs and performs, as well as the new administrative reforms throughout the kingdom that will bring Scotland more in line with the European model, and most certainly the Anglo-Saxon style at Malcolm's relationship with his own wife, but also at contest with William Rufus as his relationship with the new King of England develops, and his experience in the English court is shown throughout his changes at court. Fun fact, after this change, as I mentioned, David I would also do a similar change of style and administration reform, but to be more in line with the Norman French court. But again, we'll go over that in a future episode. Oh, that is it. That is St. Margaret of Scotland. Really enjoyed telling her story there. Thank you again to everyone for the continued support on this series. If you haven't already, please do go follow our Twitter at The History of Scotland, and also try and join our Facebook group, The History of Scotland, as well to discuss the episodes and give any feedbacks or comments to myself. As always, any other corrections or further issues that you don't want to put on those sites, you can always email me at thehistoryofscotlandpodcast@gmail.com. That is historyofscotlandpodcast@gmail.com. Please leave a review if you can, and our podcast is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, and many other great podcasting sites. Other than that, guys, the next podcast will be next week as always. So until then, stay safe, have a great week, and I'll catch you all on the next one. Peace, guys.